Hey, I'm sure there must be questions. We've got time for a few. You could speak up.
Yes, well, we were actually asked to by NASA was asked by the House committee that is responsible for the NASA authorization bill to come back with a report detailing what it would take to go and find all of the Earth-crossing bodies bigger than a kilometer that might hit the Earth. And what it would take to do that in 10 years. That was the charge to our committee. So NASA did ask me to chair that committee, and I helped bring that committee together. We were a little bit slow in getting our report out, but not that bad. We didn't quite make the deadline set by the Congress, but a few months thereafter. And we did submit a plan. We said, okay, if you really want to do this, you could find about 90% of the Earth-crossing asteroids bigger than a kilometer in 10 years. These are the asteroids now, not the comets. Comets is a separate problem. With an annual expenditure of a few million dollars a year. That's the level of effort that would be required, over and above what NASA's already doing, which is about $1 million a year. So that was our report. What happened in the meantime is there was an election. And there's, you all know about that. And the House, the chairmanship of the committee changed hands. And so George Brown, Congressman George Brown, who was the chair, is not on the committee still, but things are not happening in the same way. And as you may know, there's a big push to reduce the budget deficit in the United States. And so the Office of Management and Budget instructed NASA they were not to ask for any new money. And so our report was duly submitted to Congress, but without a request from NASA for any new money. And that's sort of where it stands. So we'll see what happens. Actually, there is an ongoing effort. In fact, Carolyn and I are associated with a team at Lowell Observatory, which is being supported by NASA, which we will be able to dramatically increase the discovery rate using new technology, new CCDs, is a special type of television detector on a Schmidt telescope. It'll increase our rate of discovery by a factor of about 100. And so we're really getting on with the job, but we won't be done in 10 years.
In my previous existence, working for also for BHP, I had the privilege of looking at some magnetic data over both the Lake T structure and also the Ackerman structure.
Yes.
And in both cases, you can see that there's actually a ring which sits outside of the, what you would presume to be the map edge of the crater.
Mm-hmm.
And that sits about, in the Lake T structure, sits out about a bit over 100 kilometres, I guess, from the edge, from the centre of the map structure,
mm-hmm.
where the rocks are actually still buckled. You can actually see these folds. And the same thing you can see in the Gawler Range volcanoes, in the Ackerman structure. It's about... Yeah, it's about 50 kilometers out from the centre of the
Ackerman structure. Thank you, that's very interesting.
You can actually see the
folds in the Gawler. I'd like to get together with you on that. That is indeed very interesting. And it does seem that some of these structures of sedimentary rocks have a very thin zone extending out much farther from the main crater where the rocks are crumpled. I'm pretty sure that's what's happening. In the crater, in the Chesapeake Bay crater, for example, it's a deep inner structure and has a very thin zone where just shallow layer beds are deformed and crumpled.
And I wonder whether that may be what's happening when one's seeing the effect of crumpling in the Frere Formation possibly producing that magnetic anomaly. That's very interesting.
But you can actually see that on the other
side. You can see the opposite.
Yeah, you can actually see the ring on the other side, on the northern side of the Lamoureux Basin.
Right.
I've got a question. You mentioned that the Jupiter collision is the first time that we'd actually seen a collision with another planet. Does that imply that actually there's some sort of fossil evidence looking at photos of the Moon or of Mars or something that there have been? I mean, I know there's big collisionary objects here, sites that you can see on the Moon surface. Are those being dated at all? Can people tell how long it's been since some of those things?
That's actually an interesting question, and one that was one of the motivations for our study at Palomar, to try to determine the population of planet-crossing asteroids and comets and calculate the cratering rates then on these other bodies. And in fact, the number that's usually cited for the mean age of the surface of Venus, which has impact craters on it, beautifully preserved, is about the half-billion-year number that you may have seen actually comes, when you trace it all the way back, comes from our survey. Because we actually half of the Earth-crossing asteroids are also Venus-crossing, so we can calculate the rate on Venus as well. Unfortunately, of course, we only know the present rate, and we don't know how that's varied in the past, independently of the evidence of the Earth and Moon. At Earth and Moon, in place where we have a control for the history of bombardment, but in terms of current rate, we can make these estimates. On the basis of this, I estimate now that the age of the groove terrain on Ganymede, the largest satellite of Jupiter, is only about 500 million years old. And the age of the surface of the satellite Europa is probably less than a few million years. That's a very active place. It's probably an ice crust on Europa or a global ocean. If you want to go find life elsewhere in the solar system, that's where I go look for it. So yes, you can, but it's only indirect. It's based on our estimates of the cratering rate. We need to get there and get the rocks back to do the other kinds of dating.
You say Earth crossing. Now, how thick a layer of the ecliptic are you talking about? Third dimension of the ecliptic.
When I say Earth crossing, what I mean by that is that during precession of the orbit, the orbits will actually intersect. Now, for an orbit, no matter what its inclination is with respect to the ecliptic, the highest inclination, by the way, is an object that was discovered in the program I started as the precursor that one Carolyn described, at about 69 degrees, so it's tilted way out of the ecliptic. But it's an Earth-crossing asteroid, as its long axis, in this case it oscillates, it doesn't completely precess, the orbit will intersect in a complete cycle of oscillation four times. And that's the usual case. So the long axis of orbit goes through a complete revolution. The orbit of the Earth and the orbit of the asteroid will intersect four times. And collisions occur when they're very close to intersection. But in other words, the path of the asteroid must pass within the capture cross-section of the Earth. And the histogram that Carolyn showed at the very beginning is based on a lot of hard calculation of the chances of collision when those necessary conditions occur.
James, I thought I understood you to say that tektites were found in situ at the site of the collision. I've been accustomed to thinking of them as the splatter going up and down again. Was my hearing correct in that?
Maybe I didn't speak well enough, Joe. The tektites in Haiti are among the closest to the site. They were about 300 kilometers away at the time. So those are the nearest tektites to the crater and in the KT boundary. So no, the tektites are not right at the crater. There's stuff that's fallen out farther away.
Yeah,
It's about, it's actually the distance that the Moldavites in Czechoslovakia lie from the Reese. Well, actually a little bit farther.
I'm interested in your comments on the extinction events in the geological record in relation to impacts. Now I note that some of the major extinction events in the record are also associated with major regression and volcanism in the record too. I wonder if you have any comments on possible relationship between impacts and volcanism and the worldwide regression events.
Okay, I'm not sure I understood you completely. I think you're talking about changes in sea level. Okay. Well, you know, I don't see anything special happening at the KT boundary at that time. You'll see level was oscillating, but we were neither at a high stand or a low stand or a very fast change right then. Sea level, you know, there was a regression over North America at about that time. So you can trace the impact out into marine water still on the, in the center of the continent then. So I don't think that's a big effect there. But, you know, some people have suggested that changes in sea level are a cause of mass extinction. I find that a little bit strange because we have really big excursions in sea levels just recently in the Quaternary, and you don't see extinctions associated with those. So I think, you know, critters are able to run back up and down the slope as the sea goes in or out. Obviously, you can get local extinction from that very well. But in terms of these deep water marine organisms, it's hard to understand how their extinction will be controlled by change in sea level. Another major idea is, you know, it's related to climate change. So I think that's right. There are climate change, and I think they're associated with the impact.
I was wondering, how is the crater in Iowa, the Mason or Manson structure, how is that tied into the KT?
Well, that's very embarrassing for me. Because I raised money to go drill the Manson impact structure. On the basis that we had preliminary argon-argon ages of shocked rocks from the central uplift, Precambrian granitic rocks, which suggested the age of the crater was right at the Cretaceous-Tertiary boundary. We hoped that we would get better material to date as well as understand the structure of the crater. It's planed off and buried under glacial deposits now, so it's all based on drilling. And we did. We found the melt sheet. Got beautiful stuff today. Sanidine crystals in the melt sheet. They gave a beautiful age. Very tight. It's 9 million years too old. But I thought originally that there might be evidence for multiple impacts at the KT boundary. And in fact, I was even thinking that those quartz grains in the upper layer seen there in the Rocky Mountain region might be from Manson. That went down in flames too because there are shocked zircon grains in that layer, and they come from a Pan-African event, which is the basement under Chicxulub, but not under Manson.
One last question.
Dr. Schumacher, I was wondering what's the current
thinking
on the 26 million year periodicity and its likely cause?
Oh, good. I was hoping somebody would ask that question. Actually, the time scale used by Raup and Sapkowski to get 26 million years is a little bit off. It's not well calibrated beyond about 100 million years. Still isn't. During which time there are only four events, and they're not perfectly periodic in their mass extinction record. If you look at the crater record and see, is there a periodic signal in crater ages? There is, but just sort of at the margin of statistical believability. My best estimate for the period is more like about 32 to 33 million years for that. And I blew it off. In a paper, I said, okay, it looks quasi-periodic, but I don't see any mechanism. Well, I looked at all the mechanisms and attacked them and said they won't work or they're very improbable. And it turns out there is a mechanism. The mechanism is the oscillation of the sun up and down through the galactic plane. And the mean time between crossing is not precisely determined astronomically, but close. It's between about 30 and 35 million years, the mean time crossing. And in fact, it's somewhat stochastic because the sun encounters other stars and it's changed a little bit as it goes around. And we now understand, a very important paper just published last year shows that just the tidal perturbation by the galaxy will change the flux of comets at the Earth by a factor of about 4. Not statistically, very adiabatically, very smoothly. It has to go up into peaks about every 33 million years. And interestingly enough, the last peak in the crater signal is about now. The second to last peak, 35 million years ago. And the next peak before that was 65 million years ago. And we're now just about to cross the galactic plane now. We're very close to it. We're in phase, and that mechanism works. And so there's got to be that fluctuation in the comet flux. So I now believe that signal.
Thank you.